And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins me as we have to break down what's going on at Alabama. Steve Sarkisian, recently promoted to offensive coordinator, off to the NFL to be the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. Where does Nick Saban go next? And what does this mean for the Tide in 2017? Plus, Dennis has talked with North Carolina Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham about its case with the NCAA. He will fill you in much more. Make sure that you're subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher, and enjoy the Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, oh boy, you would think that February is a time when everyone can lay low. The Super Bowl's done, National Signing Day's done. Dennis Dodd joining me right now here on the Doddcast. Dennis, the biggest college football machine now has an open position, just one step removed from the great Nick Saban. Alabama loses Steve Sarkisian to the Atlanta Falcons. This news broke on Tuesday as we sit here recording Wednesday morning. Dennis, you and I were in Tampa. We listened to Steve Sarkisian, his message of both personal and professional rehabilitation, the idea that this was going to be a good opportunity. You know, we thought about Jalen Hurts and everything that Alabama's offense was going to be moving forward. What was your initial reaction now that we know that A, Sark is gone, but then B, and we'll get to this next, you know, now we've got that job open at Alabama. You know, were you caught off guard by this?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I look, he was going to be the guy. They'd already put Mike Locksley in place as kind of a co-offensive coordinator to maybe lessen the burden on a Steve Sarkisian, who is admittedly going through substance abuse counseling and rehabilitation, which is great for him. But because of that, I didn't expect him to go from analyst to NFL in 2 months, which is exactly what happened. God bless him. But, you know, if you want to turn down the noise and the pressure, I don't think the NFL is the place to go. But look, I don't know. I don't know his personal life right now. And if he's built himself up to this point where he can coordinate a Super Bowl finalist, I think that's great. The second thought was that, where's Chip Kelly's phone number?
Yeah, because
I mean, it's a no-brainer. If he wants to do it, if his ego can handle it, you know, being a coordinator in college instead of an NFL head coach, why not?
So the Mike Locksley promotion, which was first reported by Bruce Feldman on January 20th, yeah. My thought in my head when I'm sort of unpacking this story is that there's a chance that for Mike Locksley, you know, very good recruiter, good offensive coordinator in a couple of different stints, but certainly not in the SEC yet, that Mike Locksley might have a shot at this. Am I off to think that his promotion might not have also been a way to prepare for this moment?
I think he's got a heck of a shot. I mean, everybody wrote Chip Kelly yesterday, but you know, I think Mike Locksley, you know, may be the next Steve Sarkisian, if you will. You know, he's had his own demons. He punched an assistant at New Mexico. There was a charge of sexual harassment on a secretary at New Mexico. But he had come back at Maryland, been an offensive coordinator under Randy Edsall, is known as one of the best recruiters really in the country. He's a fantastic recruiter, and to get him back on the sidelines and as a full-time coach where he could recruit, I think would be really, really valuable. So it may be as simple as that. You know, we may see something, you know, this week where he's just elevated. But like I mentioned, if a Chip Kelly's out there and he picks up the phone, then you got to make a couple of calls.
Okay. You know,
Billy Napier is out there. He was the receivers coach, who's well-respected, now the offensive coordinator at Arizona State. There's some question as to whether he's even signed his contract yet. So there's a lot of options.
Right. Billy Napier, you know, could just turn right around, because if you left from being the wide receivers coach at Alabama to get an offensive coordinator job at Arizona State, that to me, you know, innocent bystander on the sideline says that is a coach that is working his way up the ranks. And what is a higher ranking job than offensive coordinator at Arizona State? Offensive coordinator at Alabama. That, like Locksley, is another makes sense. You know, Saban keeps the machine rolling, and we should just assume more of the same type news. But Chip Kelly, man, what Chip Kelly could do with Jalen Hurts is enough to drive every SEC defensive coordinator crazy and make every one of us, you know, somebody in college football who witnessed his rise in the sport, to not only get him back, but to get him at Alabama would be something else.
I think it would be. And we haven't even mentioned recruiting, you know, for as long, for as little or as long as he's there. You know, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have Chip Kelly in there coordinating your offense and trying to get some of the best offensive players in the country. You know, it goes along with something I wrote during the season, which was basically I'd never thought I'd see the day, but it's, you know, Alabama is there with Lane Kiffin. They were there. Tempo, spread. They took a true freshman quarterback, and as much as you want to criticize him late, he was the SEC first team quarterback. They went whole hog into it this year. A lot of that is what Chip Kelly refined, innovated, and I think it'd be great for Alabama.
Right, because at the core of what Chip Kelly did at Oregon, and you know, just being transparent here, I didn't study any Philadelphia Eagles tape. I didn't study any 49ers tape. But I studied his Oregon offense, and he likes the power run. You know, like ultimately, the goal of Chip Kelly's offense isn't to get back and sling the ball, spread them out and sling the ball over the yard. It's to spread you out. It's to move with tempo, and it's to run the ball either between the tackles or just off tackles into the second level where you don't have a second level defender. And Alabama's got great offensive linemen. They might have to lose some weight if they're going to be able to run at Kelly's tempo, but you've got a stable of backs with Bo Scarborough, Damian Harris, Joshua Jacobs, and, like, you know, Najee Harris and a whole bunch of other young players that are ready to break out. There's enough touches to go around, and at least the philosophical basis of needing to run the ball, where I don't think it would be as much of an awkward fit as maybe the casual listener might.
No, I don't think it'd be awkward at all. I think you just hit the nail on the head. Oregon's offense, the base of it was a power running offense, just like Gus Malzahn's is when he has a Nick Marshall in there or a Cam Newton in there. It's to, you just said it, to spread you out and make you decide which way you want to go. You put too many people in the box, we're going to go outside to single coverage. You try to go out and cover those receivers, we're going to beat you up inside with the running game. And that's really what Chip Kelly's offense is, and a lot of people's offense this is. That's the other side of this I wanted to discuss, and I've written it and I've said it, that, you know, Chip Kelly coming back to Oregon, you know, when that was being speculated, wouldn't be the same thing, because, you know, everybody has now lifted his offense. You know, basically everybody runs some sort of spread, at least on third down, third and long. They're in the shotgun except for the military academies. And I think the biggest thing is that since he left Oregon, the rules have changed where you can get your defensive subs on the team, on the field, between plays. And I think that was a huge advantage for those great Oregon teams. Not so much anymore, but I don't think that would be a failing. I don't think that's why he would not fail or not win at a high level. I think he would.
And I think that also the personnel that you have at Oregon in 2017 and the personnel that you have at Alabama in 2017 are markedly different.
I'm just saying in general right now.
No doubt.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
But because if Gus can still get in there and mess people, I mean, that's like, that would make the Iron Bowl a basketball game.
Oh my gosh. Can you and Gus has his quarterback. He's got Jarrett Stidham. They're going to be a sleeper going into this season, because if he has a quarterback, that offense is always dangerous, and I think that I'm pretty sure they get Petway back, so watch out there. But you're right.
What's all right? So as we are looking at the Alabama options, we've got let's say door number one is mm-hmm. what we know. Mike Locksley, Billy Napier, some combination of assistants that were on the staff last year, either as an analyst or a coach. And, you know, ultimately Saban's the boss, and he'll tell you what the philosophy is. If there's anything else that we've learned from this process, is that Saban, though he has been a defensive coach as an assistant, understands what he wants an offensive philosophy to be and has strong feelings about it, particularly after butting heads with Lane Kiffin. Door number two, Chip Kelly, and... Can I add Mark Helfrich to that, or
yes,
is that a door number three?
I was just going to add that. Mark Helfrich has been out there kind of trolling around looking for a job to stay in the game. He doesn't want to sit out. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, Oregon's old head coach or Oregon's previous head coach. I mean, yeah, I don't think he would be bad. You know, in fact, you think about it, things would kind of settle down. It wouldn't be that daily soap opera where Nick is having to bite his lip and the cameras are always on him yelling at Lane. I think they'd run the same plays and much the same stuff, just without the drama.
I think that you're absolutely right about that. Helfrich, I think that the unceremonious exit for Helfrich at Oregon to go from playing in the national championship game to fired so quickly, I don't see him butting heads with Saban on the sideline.
And don't forget, you know, one of the most underreported, because I didn't report it. I give credit to the person who broke it, but actually no one broke it. Mark Helfrich was on the radio during the season up in Oregon after he was – I don't know if after he was fired or not. He reached out to Chip Kelly, if you recall, and said, you know, if you want to come back, I'd be all for it. I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. You just say that? I thought that just kind of passed over everybody's head one day. And I said, that's unbelievable that a sitting head coach would say that. So
I don't like this. I'll go back to being offensive coordinator, Chip. If you want to come back, this just isn't very much fun for me.
Right. It's like he's like, I can't. It's almost like saying I can't handle it anymore. If you want it, it's yours.
Well, that's where Alabama offensive coordinator is the dream job, because one program, one voice. You never have to do any of the head coach stuff. Like, not even the – you never speak to the media.
Right.
Because Saban does it all.
Yeah, you recruit, you watch film, you game plan,
and
you
coach.
You sit behind the Alabama Iron Curtain, and you coach, yeah.
Oh, man. All right, want to pivot on this one, because this was a really, really good exclusive that you got right now. North Carolina is in the midst of there's two ways of looking at it. Number one, it is a continuation of what has been almost a 6 or 7 year back and forth with the NCAA and some attention and a spotlight that started with an agent scandal, of which the football team has already served a 1 year postseason ban, taking scholarships, and then it branched out into an academic scandal where student athletes from all sports were found to have benefited from impermissible, essentially fake classes set up, no-show classes, straight-up fraudulent classes, paper classes, and now the NCAA in North Carolina, as they've been going back and forth on this, we've had three different amended notices of allegations. And without getting too lawyery and putting our audience to sleep, that is unusual. That is not the way the process normally works, to continue to have all this back and forth. And what it's really become is essentially almost like a legal battle where everyone's lawyered up, everyone's digging in their heels, and North Carolina, in its most recent official responses, has essentially said, you can't charge us major violations for this academic issue because you don't have jurisdiction over this academic issue. Now, Dennis, and you can find this on CBSSports.com as well, Dennis, you got to speak to the man himself, Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham. I've only gotten him in press conference calls, and small sit-downs. I have not gotten him one-on-one throughout this scandal. This is This is the guy. This is someone who, remember, he came from Notre Dame. He is considered, correct me if I'm wrong, considered a bit of a rising star in the industry. And he is really the face of North Carolina's defense against the NCAA. It feels to me, and I'll, you know, does he seem to know that he's taking on this role right now within the history of college athletics and the rules and the regulations and sort of the way this all plays out is going to have a big impact moving forward?
He does. And there's so much to unpack here. But, yeah, he does know that by saying this, he may antagonize the Committee on Infractions and or Greg Sankey, who's the chairman of that committee, which will sit in judgment of North Carolina in this case. I hope and pray later this year. I think it's going to be decided this year. But I think, first of all, I think the reason he spoke out was, I knew this had been bubbling at the surface for a while because I knew Bubba and, you know, and I knew about their response that you just referenced in, or whatever it was, April, which was just totally out of the box. They, you know, I almost laughed at it. I when I read it, 73 pages, you don't have jurisdiction, procedure errors, double jeopardy, you had a chance to investigate this and you passed. You in fact did investigate some of this and passed. And you know, at the time I told people, I said, I'm not even mad, I'm impressed.
Right.
it was somebody went to the length, and I was trying to figure out where the philosophy was, what came from for them to, Chip, you know this, they were out of jail at that point. The case was, they had drawn a fence around a women's basketball academic advisor, Jan Boxall, and women's basketball. It's like, oh, okay, you know, if I'm the school, yeah, good, we're good with that. We'll see you at the hearing. You know, they had dropped men's basketball.
They dropped any mention of men's basketball or football from the notice of allegations. And really the only chance that any of those two major revenue sports had an opportunity to potentially feel sanctions from the NCAA, it was the first major violation. There's five major violations in the case. And the first one just generally spoke to athletes throughout the school. But there was not any official mention of men's basketball or football when it had been in there earlier. You know, we mentioned three amended notice of allegations. UNC convinced the NCAA to take it out. UNC responded aggressively, and then the NCAA put them back in.
Before they put them back in, they had a procedural meeting, I want to say in October, November, with the NCAA to address this 73-page response, and the NCAA basically said, you got nothing here. You know, we're going to proceed as planned. We have jurisdiction. The procedures are right. We're going to go ahead. And then they file, out of nowhere, really, a third notice of allegations, which, as you said, is rare. I can't think of another one in a major case like this, and said, oh, by the way, not only are basketball and football back on the table, so is institutional control, so is extra benefits, so is unethical conduct, so are major penalties, so are, without saying it, but we all know it's true, so are those championship flags in 05 and 09 under Roy Williams.
Right.
And so they're now freaking out, thinking, well, knowing that this is going to be all on the table and they have to talk their way out of it. I'm convinced, and I've said it for a couple months now, I'm convinced they're going to get severe, big penalties, major penalties. I don't know what, but this is as bad a case. It's not the death penalty, let's be honest, but is perceived publicly as the worst academic fraud case in history. So away we go.
What were some of the things that Bubba Cunningham laid out to you that made sense, almost to a point where you were listening to him and you could follow the logic? Because I'll tell you where it comes from. North Carolina's got a great law school. They got plenty of more than willing, helpful alumni and faculty, I'm sure, who they can lean on for opinions, not to mention whoever they have on retainer.
Yeah, I was, you know, I said, who early on, I asked somebody, where did this decision to even write this response, this broad response 73-page response. And I thought it was Rick Evrard, who's in charge of the case for Bond, Shinnick, and King here in Kansas City. And I was told, no, it was the lawyers. There's a team of lawyers. Someone made the decision to go there and write this. So that, you know, and then the other part of that is I asked Bubba, you know, do you consider this retaliatory, the fact that these allegations are back on the table? And he said, well, it is and it isn't. You ask me what about this makes sense. Without answering that question, I will tell you how I think they're going to approach this, and that is semantics. He specifically, first of all, I talked to him 10 days ago at a NACDA meeting, which is the National Association of Collegiate Directors of Athletics in Marco Island, Florida. And I was on a panel with him, and I turned to him and said, are you okay talking about this? Because I said, I knew this was bubbling below the surface, and I knew him, and I thought it was time. And he said, sure. So that's where that came from. Now, how they're going to defend themselves, I think a lot of it is going to be semantics. And the latest notice of allegations, North Carolina is accused of, quote-unquote, leveraging their position with Debbie Crowder and
Julius Nyangoro, the former chair of the African American Studies Department,
right? To establish these classes, which has never been said before. So he showed me that on, which is public, the second notice of allegations, and he said in the case he makes in the story, we leverage that relationship. We make special arrangements every day. Last year, we went to the business school. The business school teaches a leadership class. We asked them to set up a class for our student athletes, and they did. 100%. We leveraged that class. And I said, are you going to be using that as an example in the hearing? And he said, absolutely. Well, you know, again, so this is me talking again. Will that pass muster? I don't think it will. But they are at the heart of their case is the NCAA has always had a moving target for what academic fraud is, case by case basis. The NCAA, North Carolina, is going to say, has no business telling any school, including North Carolina, what classes it can offer. And I thought the key quote in the story is, this is Bubba speaking, I told the NCAA, if a class is on my transcript, I have a grade, I have a credit. How are you, is the outside athletic agency telling me that's not good? Now, we can debate that, but I think that's the heart of their case. And I think that's what a lot of schools believe, that the NCAA has no business in there. Now, the other side of that, Chip, as you know, again, 18 years, largely perceived as massive academic fraud. But I'm just laying out what I think they'll do. I don't know if it'll help them, but I think this is how they'll do it.
Mm. He is Dennis Dodd. Follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. Dennis, thank you so much. We'll circle back next week where I'm sure that, you know, given the way that college sports is tangling, even though it's the quiet season, nothing will be quiet.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip.